You have just entered the Katie Ma Podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 295 of the KB Mod Podcast. It is October 1st, 2017, and I'm here, joined by the lovely KD Zen, with an underscore. KD Zen, no longer 18. He's now graduated to an indeterminate number. That's why the underscore is there. It's to add some mystery.
Yes.
And and we also have Yingity Yang joining us once again. So welcome, gentlemen. I'm Brandon, obviously. If this isn't your first cast, I guess it wouldn't be obvious if you just started listening. So I shouldn't.
Right.
I shouldn't assume. I shouldn't assume that the listener knows who we are. But we're here. Scott is out this week. He was on a little mini vacation, and said he had to get his life back in order after returning today. So I don't really know what that means, but he has a reprieve this week. So we will miss him dearly, but the show must go on, as we say in show business. So how have you guys been doing?
Are you in any sort of show business?
Or? Well, I mean, this is a sort of show business, you know. This is kind of like open mic night, you know. We got a few people sitting around the room.
I think we are the stage. I mean, if we're looking for things to put on like resumes, we can always add. No, we were showrunners for about 300 episodes of, every single Sunday night entertaining.
Hey, you're joking, but I actually think that there is some value to, you know, being in front of people for pretty much every single week for years on end. You know, it helps you a little bit with public speaking. It's not a direct corollary. Like, it's very different being on a podcast as opposed to like being in front of 100 real people or something. But I think some of the skills are the same, you know.
There's definitely an application.
I think KD, I think you've come out of your shell a little bit more than when you were when first on the podcast, you know.
Oh my god, I cannot.
Have you listened to yourself on those old episodes?
I tried and I maybe made it 30 seconds into the episode and I just couldn't do it. I don't even think I said anything wrong. I just think I'm very critical of myself, and so as far as just speaking, like in like an a live internet like manner, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, I think I've gotten a lot better at that.
It's, yeah. Well, I mean, the skill set is certainly not transferable from writing podcast questions with very interesting grammar and capitalizations.
That's true. That's true. But I think it is kind of a learned skill. You get better at, I don't know, you get better at talking, and I think learning to speak up, learning to kind of keep conversation flowing, which can be applicable to real life too, you know. But yeah, I mean, maybe don't put this on your real resume. I'm not sure that, I'm not sure that you want your potential employer actually checking out these podcasts.
yeah, maybe not. You know, I will be honest. The people I work with now, it's not a very professional workplace. And over, you know, I'm not surprised that in the past 2 years I've worked there, that word has slipped about my, you know, internet presence. And it's gotten to the point where I will go into work and my boss will go, "What's up, baby?" And I'm just, oh man, ooh, what have I done?
Yeah, that's, it's like once you've opened, you can't put that genie back in the bottle, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I could trust them. But, no, I just, never reveal your deepest, darkest secrets to your higher ups in employment.
That's good advice for anyone. Well, how have you guys been? What have you guys been up to this week?
I think there's something. I don't know. I'll have to go. Ying, how about you go first? I'm gonna try and recall.
Well, this has been the first weekend where I've actually had the time to just sit down and do nothing except play video games, which was very refreshing.
Nice.
Awesome. I get sort of like a gross feeling from it because part of me feels like I should have been more productive. But then again, it's been so long since I've been able to just sit down and you know, sort of just do whatever I wanted that sort of is overpowering that other obligation to do something that feels productive. But we'll get more into that when we talk about what we've been playing. And other than that, I managed to get a stream off, and I don't know, it's just been a nice week. It's been busy, but the weekend has been very enjoyable.
That's awesome. Cool. Yeah, nothing wrong with just sitting back and playing some games. I did a little bit of that this week, weekend as well. AD, have you recalled the incredible thing that happened to you this week?
I have, but yeah, real quick, just more on that. Like, I know exactly what you mean. Like, I'll get time off and I'll think, like, sometimes I'll think, okay, I don't have work for the next couple of days. Absolutely zero obligation anywhere. I'm going to stay up all night tonight. I'm going to play fucking Tales of Berseria. And then I'll get to like 1 a.m. and think, I really should go to bed. I really need to get up early for that. And just, I mean, it's very difficult, you know, as getting older to kind of do stuff like that. But that's really cool that you know.
Well, the danger is I can't mess up the sleep schedule too much, because that's the trap, right? You think that because you have the weekend off, you can stay up late. But what you're really doing is sabotaging your sleep schedule for Sunday night when you got to get up again at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm.
But that's a future you problem, though.
That is a future, yeah. Like, you know, if night Yingity is like, I deserve this, and then morning Yingity. Morning Yingity is so mad at night Yingity.
I don't get what happened. I fell asleep at 1 a.m. and woke up at 11:50. Like, how did this happen?
Classic
but
night.
No, right, yeah. But I remembered what I did. And now that I remembered it, it's going to sound even more, like, scumbaggy, like, as if I tried to, like, play it up somehow. But no, I honestly, like, it's nothing huge. I've been trying to, like, stream more. And after, you know, streaming for a few days, you know, or, you know, whatever the requirements are for a Twitch affiliate. Did I talk about this last week? I don't think I talked about it. But, yeah, I did get an affiliate on Twitch.
Yeah, no, congratulations. Yeah. That's, yeah,
congratulations.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Taking your streaming career to the next step.
Right, yeah. I'm open to a whole new class of people to be insulted by. affiliate scum. It just feels great. What can I say? But, yeah, it's been great. And bits and subs already, I mean, I'm not trying to brag or anything. I just mean to say that, like, the support that has been shown already is really cool, and I've already got emotes in the works, and which I am thoroughly happy with, and I can't wait to... I mean, part of me is like, oh man, these great emotes for my followers, but part of me is like, I just want to put my friend Miles's face in every single chat I come across. Because then I'm thinking, like, is it scumbag? Is it, like, scummy to use your own emotes in another stream? Like,
if it is scummy to try to get your own emotes spammed in another stream.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's where I think it crosses the line. Because if you use your own in the proper endearing context, that's fine.
Yeah, I think it's okay if it's kind of your calling card, but you can't try and get other people on board. You don't want to try and like, overtake the conversation.
Exactly.
But, right. Because I mean, maybe I'm looking too far into it, but I'll see someone who's like partnered or an affiliate and be like, "Hey, what's up, guys?" And they'll post their own "What's up, guys?" variant or something, or like they'll die in the game and they'll post their RIP variant or like, you know, RIP or F, and I'm just like, eh. But there's probably no issue at all.
I think that's fair.
No,
you gotta, you know, okay. you wanna show it off. Like, I mean, you as the channel owner get those emotes for free, so why not? You know, why not do a little advertising if they're that good.
Okay, yeah, I think I'm overthinking it too much, but yeah, I'm excited to keep growing, you know.
That's awesome.
Stream more often.
That's awesome, yeah. Thank you. Congratulations. Now the journey cool. just begins.
Right, yeah. So I'm gonna quit my day job and, you know, just stream full-time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is where you quit your job and go full-time, is my understanding.
Yep. All right. Excellent, let's do it. Thanks, guys. I'm also taking donations on my Twitter.
Let me just drop my PayPal link in chat.
Oh, man. Now, that's the real etiquette question, is if you want to drop your PayPal link in other chat rooms.
Is that
frowned upon at all? No.
Something tells me you know the answer to that one.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
Well, what?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, so did you have let's talk about what we've been eating. Did you have any like special dinner or meal to celebrate your affiliate status?
You know, when you live with the kind of parents I do, just impressive chefs, every night is a celebration. I don't know. I had some really good ribs just about an hour ago. What did I have last night? It was this kind of pasta, chicken, and mushroom mix. And it was just delightful. I wish I knew the recipes to these things because I need to start, you know, being bought these things instead of just consuming.
Sounds like you enjoy some pretty high quality food there. So it, you know, the pressure's on, you know, you gotta carry on that legacy.
Right. Yeah. There's that. And then there's also not knowing any real recipe for food other than pour the water in the ramen plastic bowl and then microwave for 1 minute. That's the extent of my cooking prowess. Yeah, I got to pick up on stuff.
Okay. Well, that sounds like pretty good. Even if that was just like a normal run of the mill meal for you, I got to say that sounds pretty delightful.
It was. Yeah. I wish you could have been there.
Yeah.
I wish both of you could have been there.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll come visit, and I'll just have your parents cook for me.
Well, I'll let you know my wedding is, and then you can fly over.
I've already got a standing invite to your wedding.
I need to have that power couple.
Yeah, the power invite, yes.
The power invite, yep, all right.
Cool. Ying, any delicious meals this week?
Yeah, I was recommended to try something that I didn't even know existed earlier this week. Which was shawarma poutine.
Okay.
So it was poutine, but I guess with the ingredients of what you would expect to be inside of a shawarma. So it was like this garlic sauce, a chipotle mayo, hot sauce, and then cheese over fries with chicken. And I really wasn't sure what to make out of it when I first heard about it. And I guess it was surprisingly good. I don't know if I'll ever order it again, but I don't know. It was one of those things that were at my workplace. People were raving about it, saying it's so good. I'd never heard of it before, so decided to give it a shot. And I don't think I can give it a glowing review because it was just sort of, there was so much sauce that it made the fries kind of soggy, which detracted from the experience, you know, as time went on. But overall, I'm glad I tried it. It was, I don't know if I would say that it was good, but it was certainly interesting.
That's a kind of unusual combination. I'm not sure, obviously we don't really have poutine here in the States, but I don't know that I've heard of poutine being mixed with other types of dishes. Like, is that a common thing in Canada?
It actually is not too uncommon. So there's a chain, at least in Ontario, I don't know how far or how widespread it is across Canada, but there's a chain here called Smokes Poutinery, and they specialize in gourmet poutine. So you can do things like a cheeseburger poutine. They'll have a Montreal smoked meat poutine. And that's just sort of what they do. They'll try to find dishes that are, I guess, are endearing on their own and try to make a poutine version of it, which, of course, is a very hit or miss kind of business.
Yeah, I bet.
But evidently they've succeeded well enough because they have sort of the staples of the things that have worked out very well, which I guess is their business formula, where they'll just try introducing so many new recipes per year. And then whatever ones end up being popular, they'll just add that to their permanent menu. But yeah, that is certainly a common practice, at least in Ontario where I live.
Okay, that's pretty cool. I don't know that I had anything. So I guess the only thing I can really remember is on Friday night, we were after work, went over to a friend's place. And there were a bunch of us there, and you know, we're just drinking, having a good time. And I was getting really hungry, and I thought, you know, I'm at my friend's place. I don't want to like ask if he has food or something, you know. So I'd need to go out and get food or order food, you know, to his house or something. I was like, I don't know what I want. And then all of a sudden, someone comes in with like $100 at Taco Bell, and
oh, shit.
And so I was on that immediately. And I don't think so. I mean, I've had quite a few items from Taco Bell over the years, but I don't think that I have ever had what I believe was a cheesy gordita crunch. It was like a Taco Supreme, but it was a double. It had like two shells, and I think cheese in between the two shells. Whatever it was delicious and
awesome.
I think it was a cheesy gordita crunch. Or it was something like that. But it was fantastic. So I had two of those, would absolutely have those again. And it was like the perfect timing of just knowing, like, I gotta have food, trying to think about, like, how am I gonna get food to this place that is not my own? And, man, it was just perfect. Just two cheesy gordita crunches. I ate them. I devoured them. So I hadn't tried that before, but that was very good. Although I'm sure it was very unhealthy.
Taco Bell is one of those things that I consistently feel like I miss out on, because even though I know Taco Bell certainly does not have a high quality standard in the States, it is markedly lower in Canada to a point where it is absolutely not even worth going there. It is just bad. It's not even that kind of fast food that is redeeming while you're eating it and then you regret it later. It's just a bad experience from start to finish.
Wow. I'm kind of surprised to hear that, because I feel like their quality in the States, I feel like their quality is pretty similar across all the different Taco Bells. Like, you know what you're getting anytime you walk into one, because it all tastes the same.
Right.
I wonder maybe if they have a different distributors or something in Canada.
I mean, it's a similar thing where I used to hear that apparently KFC in Jamaica and other Caribbean islands have been really, really good. Like their standard for quality is much higher. So I'm sure it's a regional thing. I'm not quite sure why, but Taco Bell is one of those that is certainly not on the higher tier in terms of fast food in Canada.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be clear, it's not really high tier fast food in the US either, but it is edible. Right. And in a pinch, you know, it can do the job. So.
I will say, speaking of Taco Bell, I was with some friends in the car. They're getting some Taco Bell. I'm not dining from them, but I just got a curiosity and, like, you know what? How about you ask them if they have any naked chicken chips? And the food I missed out on that I still continue to get shit about.
And
the guy operating says, "We don't, but they're coming back."
Really?
So the naked chicken chips, yeah, they are going to return, and I'll finally have my chance to try them out.
Ooh, nice. I wouldn't mind for those to become a staple of the menu.
Yeah, I heard from a lot of people that they were really tasty, so I'm excited to try them out.
I'm excited for you, because, yeah, that was quite a miss on your part.
Yeah, I heard.
Well, awesome. Yeah. What have we been playing, AD? We just continue with you. What have you been up to? Yeah.
Well, let's pull up my old installed, and then let's pull up my old recent, because that's the wrong tab on Steam. I played, so I haven't gotten too far in it. I'm just like 3-4 hours in, but I started playing a lot of Hob after acquiring that game in a certain fashion from a friend of mine who will remain nameless. No, I got it from Brandon. It's a review for Cabemon. But yeah, I've been playing that, and it's from the same people that made Torchlight, so I had some decent expectations. And just visually, atmospherically, it's been really blowing me away. It's in a lot of ways comparative to, it feels like a solid Zelda equivalent for PC. You know, it's, you explore an area, you find new weapons, tools to open up other areas. In a lot of ways, it feels like a 3D kind of Metroidvania kind of style. A lot of environment exploration. The exploration and level design is absolutely like a solid 100% in the part of the game. I just finished what the first, I guess, dungeon would be. And just the way every single piece of that level connects to itself and changes when you get deeper into the level has been just jaw-dropping. And it's really cool. But some complaints I've gotten so far is just for how much, you know, exploring and tinkering with the world that you do, from, you know, you'll pull one lever, then the whole world will change around you. You just think to yourself, like, what am I really doing besides just running around and, you know, solving minor puzzles? There's not a terribly lot of action in the game. And at the end of it's like the electric part, which would be, I guess you would call it the dungeon, where it kind of felt like, well, here's the thing. There's no boss. There was no finality to that entire area. You go to the end, you're on the tower, you hit the final switch, and everything is all beautiful, and then you're out of there. You're back to the main area again, like the first area, the hub world again. And you're like, wait a minute, is that it? There's no finality to it. It's kind of like playing a dungeon in Zelda, and then, like, you'll get to the final room, and you'll just, like, pick up the heart container and leave, you know? It's like, but other than that, I mean, we'll see, hopefully, because, I mean, 3 hours in, I haven't seen a single boss. I mean, there have been tough fights. Hard mode has been pretty disappointingly easy. But, yeah, it's been a pretty good game so far. Good stuff from Runic Games. Definitely worth the price tag. And definitely seems like it'd be a game worthy of, like, speedrunning, getting into speedrunning, which that excites me. But I'm not sure if it'll really take off because a lot of it is just running and jumping, right? Pretty much every enemy encounter I've had so far it's a perfectly viable tactic to just run past everything.
Hmm.
Which, I hate that in games. But other than that, mainly I've also been playing, I put a lot of time so far into the Call of Duty World War II open beta.
Yeah.
And yes. We can do that as a nice transitionary piece into Yingity. So let's talk World War II open beta.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are our thoughts so far? Yay or nay?
Well, I went into this game with relatively low expectations. I had not played a Call of Duty in any reasonable quantity since Call of Duty Ghosts, which of course, is not in any sort of grandstanding with the very rational and level-headed Call of Duty community. Not that that game deserves any sort of level-headed praise, anyways. So coming into this, I had a pretty low standard. I managed to avoid that entire era of jetpack, wall running, crazy kill streak. So my perspective on this game might be a little bit skewed towards, you know, it's not that new to me, given that any Call of Duty game has always been boots on the ground, so to speak. But I'm having fun with it. Call of Duty has always been, at least in my opinion, sort of a competent arcade shooter. If you just want to go in and mindlessly shoot things, it in my understanding, always does the job. And Call of Duty World War II does that for me. I've been having a lot of fun with the beta, despite a couple of issues. But to start with the things that I think it's done well, the shooting feels wonderful. I think the gunplay is great.
Yes.
It feels crisp. It feels easy to control. It's a very crisp feeling game. And as far as the movement, that feels fine too. I think the biggest thing that people were pointing out, which of course is something that I haven't had experience with, but you are not dying to kill streaks every other second. Getting a kill streak actually feels like something that someone actually had to earn. And even if they did earn it, they're getting maybe like a double or a triple kill off of it at most.
Yes.
And I understand the community has been praising that for toning down how obtrusive kill streaks are in the game. But even then, Sledgehammer has been taking some pretty quick action. So people have been saying that SMGs were very overpowered at the beginning of the beta, and they have already been nerfed. That was a patch that was introduced, I believe, on like the second day of the beta. Which is pretty crazy. That is some fast acting to patch in something they believe was overpowered on the second day of an open beta.
Right.
Overall, I would say the game has been a lot of fun. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, I'll kind of go the same structure, you know, positives and negatives. I think, you know, just like atmosphere-wise, visually, audibly, it's just incredible. Everything, it's actually a very, very pretty game, even with like shadows turned off, everything on normal, very good looking, and just the sounds from the guns, everything like that is totally nailed. And one thing that really got me was when you first got an airstrike and he actually pulled open a flip, like folded map of a cloth map, and you could select it on the paper instead of like an image command. That's just a little thing, but I thought that was cool. But the main negatives, it definitely comes down to, there are a lot of gun balancing issues. I think even after, I played a decent amount of time after the patches, and SMGs are definitely still very dominant, especially after they added the Tommy gun to the beta. That gun has that is a laser beam from what I've heard. But I mean, just for using getting a decent feel for all the guns, it feels like you can do pretty well with most of the guns, but in pretty much any situation, if you're not using an SMG, you're not doing as well as you could be doing.
Yeah. The general play for that is if you're not using an SMG, you're wrong. And if you're not using an SMG, you're wrong unless you are using the STG assault rifle.
Right. Yeah.
which is the other thing that was nerfed during that second day patch. It apparently had even less recoil than what it does now, and it still is a very straight shooter. So I didn't have a chance to use it pre-nerf, but as you said, I mean, I think gun balancing issues are inherent to a game like this where, you know, you're not going to, those kinds of issues aren't going to make themselves apparent until you introduce it to a larger player base. So I think those are issues that will get resolved eventually. And as you said, even as it stands, most guns, you can make them work, which has been classically Call of Duty anyways. It is a dominant game at the moment.
Yeah, a main thing that kills a lot of weapons, for example, like the M1 Garand, is just something that I know Timmy fucking hates this. He complains about it all the time, but the aim punch in the beta is very strong. Like it affects you very much. Like some guns, like the Garand, is just, you know, unusable after that first time you get shot because aim punch is pretty powerful. And also for the shotguns, basically in this Call of Duty, you have divisions where you pick, you know, certain class where you have different benefits depending on which gun class you use. And for the shotgun, the very first one you unlock is you get four incendiary rounds, which I think are very powerful. And I think that it's like you're getting a kill streak like every single time you spawn into the game. It reminds me of I think there might have been, I don't know if Dragon's Breath rounds from Black Ops 1 or ever in the beta, but they were just really, really strong, and everyone starts with them, and so there are plenty of times when I'm playing with people and they're, oh, there's that one guy running around with the shotgun, just insta-killing, you know, everyone. Oh, he really got outskilled there. He turned around and clicked me. But, you know, it's so. And then the range, I mean, it's no Modern Warfare 2 shotgun, but it's pretty strong. And then also the K damage. Like, I wouldn't have a problem with those incendiary rounds if they weren't, you know, a guaranteed get every single spawn. Those seem like a kill streak to me. So, I mean, I'm not sure. I think it might be too late for a change, you know, we're this far in, but that's an issue I have. But,
I think you're right, especially when you compare it to, so as Katie Zen was saying, when you select a division in this game, every division gets their own sort of, I don't even want to call it like a special ability. You compare that to the other divisions, it is definitely a bigger advantage. I mean, on the SMG class, which is the airborne division, you get a suppressor that just straight up lowers how much damage you're doing, and is really just not worth using. I can see in comparison to some of the other division abilities, it may not appear the most balanced.
Yeah, I agree. But one more thing about the suppressor is that it doesn't lower the damage, it lowers the range. And it's actually better to pick the suppressor, because for every kill you get with the suppressor, you get another extra 50 points. So if you're like grinding your gun, trying to get more attachments, it's a good idea to put that on. But yeah, that's not really a balancing thing. But all thanks to the KB Mod podcast. No, but it's overall, it's not something I would drop $60 on. It's, you know, it's Call of Duty. It's good, mindless fun, but I just don't see it as a full price game yet. But still enjoying it though, and I'll probably be playing it after the podcast.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I will try and probably play it a little bit before the open beta ends tomorrow. I think it goes until Monday.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. It ends tomorrow, 10 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'll try to get in as much time as I can. Already ran into a hacker. That was fun.
Oh, my goodness. Today, for whatever reason, the amount of cheaters that has suddenly appeared almost overnight on this beta has been wild. I suppose that's not to be unexpected. The beta is free to play, and it's in beta.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, every single hacker we found, we went on their Steam profile, and it's just brand new account, has VAC bans on record. It really doesn't matter because it's a free beta. You can just make a new Steam account, download the game, and then, you know, so it's been pretty annoying. There was one pretty funny kill cam that came out of it where someone had a sniper. They're not really final kill cams anymore. It's like they're kind of more play the game style from like Overwatch or something, where he had the sniper. He aims, locks onto one guy's head, and then flicks over to the other guy robotically and takes the shot. And it was just the funniest thing. Like, it was so blatant. I have it clipped. I'll see if I can throw it in chat, but it was just hilarious. But yeah, that's all I played this week.
Okay. Cool. Ying?
Cool.
So outside of the Call of Duty beta, I've had the opportunity to play and stream Cuphead. So yeah, Cuphead came out a couple days ago. If you are unfamiliar with Cuphead, it is a game that I believe was announced, I want to say, was it 3 years ago? And has sort of made its occasional appearance on E3 since. And then suddenly it was upon us. I had actually forgotten about the game until last week's cast where we mentioned that it was being released. And I was like, oh my God, really? I almost forgot about it. I'm very excited for this game. So I had the opportunity to play that, and it is all hand-drawn. Every animation, everything you see in that game is hand-drawn, which makes sense why it took them so long to make it. And as one of my friends pointed out before I managed to play it, the soundtrack is also an original jazz score. So if you're talking about a game being built from the ground up, this really is it. Everything is hand-drawn. The music is original. And it is styled sort of in like a 1930s, Steamboat Willie. I don't know, Steamboat Willie might have been a little bit earlier, but that kind of a cartoon. Mm-hmm.
That's definitely what it reminds me of, is like that Steamboat Willie sort of old school cartoon vibe.
Yeah, exactly. Ed, it is, and it the how well they have captured that art style is astounding. It is mesmerizing looking at this game and just taking in how well it captures the feel of those 1930s cartoons, to a point where even some of those scarier drawings, like those scarier cartoons where you look back on it and say, like, some of these scenes are actually kind of terrifying. It captured that so well. And on top of all that, someone in my chat had pointed out midstream, after I had mentioned that everything was hand-drawn, the game runs so well, obviously, is for a platformer. And the animations are at such a high frame rate, too. For these to have been hand-drawn must have taken so much time.
Oh yeah,
it is a beautifully crafted game, and it is done in sort of that bullet hell platforming style of the game, which they also, I believe, nailed the difficulty. It is by no standard an easy game to play. They hit you with some difficult platforming with the timing of projectiles and the boss battles, and it is a very boss battle oriented game, but they make you do everything in your power to avoid even taking one hit, because it is such a punishing game. And I would relate beating one of those bosses a similar feeling to beating a Dark Souls boss. You spend...
go on.
I already got Katie's attention. Excellent. but you will spend, you know, dozens of attempts just trying to get past this one boss battle, this boss's phase, and he'll transition into something else afterwards after you get his health down to a certain point. And it's just like a whole new battle from that point on. And it's an experience that this game is going to win awards for, if anything, even just artistic direction and how beautifully crafted this game has been. And I also think this game's going to be amazing when it makes its appearance on Games Done Quick.
I was going to say, does it seem like a good speedrunning game?
Is going to be so cool to watch, especially because it is such a difficult game. But If you're interested in picking up Cuphead, I would definitely say go for it. It is a beautiful game. It is a difficult game. But even though it can get frustrated because it's so difficult, as I was saying earlier, it's how beautiful of a game it is and how great it sounds almost distressed me from the fact that I have died against this boss 50 plus times trying to get past this one section.
It definitely seems like a game that does a lot for the idea that, you know, games are art. I know I don't think that's a controversial topic probably among our audience and among us, but that's like been an ongoing debate. And I feel like this is one of those games where there's just no question. Like it is an artistic, an artistic thing, even though it is a game. Just looking at like all the gameplay of it, I'm like, I'm watching a cartoon. This is actually a cartoon. It's just a cartoon you control.
Yeah, it is very odd actually playing that game, because it doesn't look like you should be able to control anything in what you're looking at. It looks like the entire game, as you said, is a cartoon. And the fact that you have control over what's happening on screen is bizarre. But yeah, as you said, I mean, the idea of video games are art. This is literally something that has been handcrafted. As I said, the animation and the style has all been hand drawn, and it's an original jazz score that accompanies the gameplay. So
that's really
Cuphead
cool.
is something that I've had the chance to stream, and I'll be continuing to move through that whenever I have the time. And the other thing I managed to play has been Epic Games' Fortnite Battle Royale.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
The PUBG killer.
The famous PUBG killer on the rise. Actually, I don't know what. Actually, someone might want to look it up. I don't know how many concurrent players it currently has. I had the chance to play that, and I'm certainly biased. So this is not a segment that I think anyone should take my opinion very seriously on. But I enjoy the Fortnite Battle Royale.
Okay.
Way more than PUBG.
Ooh. Really. Way
and
more.
Only for two primary reasons. One, it is way more casual. There is so little stress in playing Fortnite BR because the style is more cartoony and the gameplay is much faster than PUBG. For example, the map is much smaller, movement is much faster. There is no point in ever risking being in the or outside of the play zone because it hits you for so much. It forces like really quick engagements, and the game is actually over relatively quickly, especially in comparison to PUBG. But the second reason why I like it way more is because I can actually play it. I've had a lot of technical difficulties trying to get PUBG to run for me, mostly in that 50% of the games that I fly into, buildings don't render for me, and I lag out and I die. So that's why I say maybe I'm not the best correspondent on this, because I've actually had difficulties just straight up running PUBG. However, I can speak to the fact that Fortnite Battle Royale does run very, very well. It is a very smooth gameplay experience. So a lot of it's just the mental aspect of, you know, if I launch Fortnite BR, I'm not spending that first 5 minutes actually getting into a game wondering if I'm actually going to be able to play once I get into the map. Which is what I was doing with PUBG. I think it's worth giving a shot, especially since it's free. There's no reason to not try it. But if you're looking for something that's basically a very casual PUBG with a couple of different elements to it that I don't think are necessarily groundbreaking. But yeah, I had the chance to play that.
Cool.
Not much to report on, and other than I think it's a good bit of fun. I think it's worth trying with a couple of friends, given that it will cost you nothing to play it. That's what I've been playing this week. Yeah. That's what I've been playing this week. So it was the COD World War II beta, Cuphead, which is amazing, and Fortnite BR, which was enjoyable.
Before I forget, one more thing I want to say about Cuphead. Kind of throwing this in there. Found something on TheYeti.com where they're doing something. They have a bunch of Cuphead shirts, but they also have these. I'll drop a link in chat, and I'll try to put it on the doc if you're an audio listener. But they have these replica Cuphead and Mugman ceramic mug set you can pre-order, and they just look incredible, top-notch. It's pre-order. It's like, it's pretty expensive, but it looks like you're getting what you pay for. These look so cool. I just wanted to shout these out. But yeah, if you're a big fan of Cuphead, definitely check these out.
Actually, some good merchandise coming from that game for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. Really good main character.
Cool. Well, I'll go real quick. I've had a little more variety than typical. I haven't really played much PUBG this week, but I did decide to try Pyre because the Supergiant has having a sale on Steam where all their stuff was on sale. And so if you haven't tried like Bastion or Transistor, both of those were on sale, and those are definitely worth buying if you haven't. Absolutely. I learned that Ying has not played Bastion. Which is just a travesty.
Oh, so a sin.
I promise it's on my list of things to play.
Yeah, we're gonna fix that. But yeah, so I tried Pyre.
Have to say about this.
Yeah, I played it for maybe I want to say like an hour and a half, 2 hours, something like that. And it's definitely got a different feel than Bastion and Transistor did. It doesn't really have the feel that you're like, you know, controlling a character, throughout a world, because Pyre, it's a lot more reading dialogue than I expected, which I didn't love. I did not love that. And I'm kind of, I, I, I'm not sure. I mean, it's a different feeling game than the other ones, and I think that was probably intentional on their part.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely didn't expect to have to be reading as much dialogue. And I'm basically, I found myself like not caring about the story that much because it was just a lot of reading. And I was like, why do I care about these characters? You know, do I really have to keep reading about this stuff? And I think some people might get into the story, but I just found it a little bit forgettable. Especially because like with Bastion, you have the narrator, and that was like such a strong part of the game, mm-hmm. is that narrator's presence. And so there's like, you know, you're moving around and there's a lot of audio that you're listening to, but it feels really fluid. Pyre to me feels a little less fluid. It feels like, so when I go into the actual game, the game of Pyre, or the rites, they call it.
Yeah.
The gameplay is fun. Like, I think the actual game you're playing is pretty fun. It's like pretty smart. It's sort of a little bit like basketball, I guess. But it's really hard to explain. It's like pretty easy to learn, but I don't think I could explain it well over voice. But it's a fun, you know, it's a fun game, and basically you're just like, it seems like you're just trying to win game after game, and you level up your characters, they get more abilities, and the AI gets probably a little bit more challenging over time. I'm on the standard difficulty, and I haven't lost a game yet. Like, I don't actually think it's very difficult on the standard mm-hmm. difficulty. But again, yeah. I'm not super far in yet. So I think it, you know, for, I bought it on sale, so it's like $15. I mean, it is, I think, super giant quality in that the art is really nice. Like, it's very polished, you know, haven't crashed or anything. I think it's a quality product. So for $15, I think it's worth the money. But I don't think it's as good as their other games have been. I mean, like Bastion, I feel like it's not even fair comparing games to Bastion because Bastion is just like on a level of its own.
Right.
But I thought Transistor was really good too, and just like a kind of a different spin on that same kind of gameplay where you're moving a character around. This one it's just like, it's not quite doing it for me in terms of the pacing. And so I mm-hmm. I wish there was like a little more action, either like more, basically like less downtime between the games, cause that's the fun part. Or like maybe if they had chosen a different way of telling the story, I think I might have right. enjoyed that a little bit more. But it's, you know, it is a good game. I think the story is like not really doing it for me. So I could see myself just like starting to skip through all the dialogue and just basically get as quickly as I can to the next game because that's the fun part.
Right. Yeah.
Which is kind of a shame because I like Supergiant spends a lot of time on the story and stuff. So it's a shame to skip all of that. But I was just a little bit surprised that they decided to go with full reading dialogue as opposed to, I think if it was like voice acted more, obviously mm-hmm. that would have added cost, but like the audio elements of their games have been so strong. And I feel like this one doesn't really lean into that. And I think I would have liked to see it, you know, lean into the audio side more.
I agree. I pretty much agree with everything you said. It just, I mean, I really want to love this game. Like I really want to love all the characters, just, like the environments, all the visual artwork done was crazy, but it just, they made a visual novel and I wasn't expecting a visual novel.
Yeah, you know, you're kind of right. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way to put it, that it feels kind of like a visual novel, and mm-hmm. their previous games did not have that feel at all. So it feels it's a little bit jarring compared to their other games because this one is not like those.
Especially like directly compared to something like Transistor, where the story is a lot of ways you have to really think about it for yourself. Pyre, they really spoon feed like everything to you. You need to know. Yeah. There's very little extra thinking, at least. And I haven't finished it from what I've played, which I think I'm about 8 hours in. But, I mean, it's pretty much been, you know, not too much to think about, you know.
And I'm, you know, you say you're 8 hours in, like, I don't know that I'm going to make it to the end of the game, which is not normally what I'd expect from a Supergiant game, but I think one, it speaks to just how high quality their previous games were, that they had a really high bar to shoot for. And also, you know, they tried something different. Like, I can't fault them too much, because I think they're, if they had made a game that was very similar in feel to Bastion and Transistor, we would start looking at them, like Telltale, you know, like a one trick pony that, like, they're not actually, right. they're not actually, sort of getting out of their comfort zone and stuff. So I don't want to be too hard on them, because, like, it is a quality game. It's just not what it's so different from their other games that it's not really what I expected. But for someone who does kind of want a kind of visual novel type game, I bet this is right up that person's alley. It's just that it's maybe not quite what I'm looking for.
Yeah, and when it comes down to just when you finally get to the gameplay, and I know we talk about Vampire a lot, but, like, some of the times, like, when it comes to the matches, I think they're over with, like, way too quickly. And yeah. sometimes when I score goals, I feel like I'm cheating. Like, I feel like I'll pick the character that can jump and fly, or I'll pick the character that can, like, go extremely quick, and I'll just pick them and I'll run past everyone. Like, you know how in Dark Souls, when you are in an area and you don't kill everyone, you just, like, run past through the very end and feel like, okay, really dodged all those guys. That's Pyre. That's the entire game.
Like, it feels, that's what, like, it feels a, like it feels like a game that I think would do reasonably well with an online component of some sort. Like, the gameplay yeah. itself is pretty Ooh. Fun, pretty tight. And I think there are some interesting ideas that would make that a fun, you know, one-on-one experience with a friend.
Oh yeah. And I'm sure the local co-op is great, but there's no one who I can convince to play this local co-op with me on Pyre.
Yeah, that just that doesn't seem like a that doesn't seem like something anyone will take advantage of locally. But I would absolutely, you know, after playing it for a bit, if we both on Pyre, I would say, like, hey, KD, let's do some 1v1.
Oh yeah,
you know, and get in a few games like we would. Playing like Madden or 2K or something. Like, it's almost right, it's like yeah. it's basically kind of like a fantasy style sports game almost.
It does.
Because like the story is it's just like the story is just this backdrop to like this basketball style game, which again is like so weird for Supergiant because it's so different from their other games. But anyway, I mean, I think if they had priced this game at like $40 or $60, this would be a way harder thing for me to recommend. But like at $15, and you know, I bet the next Steam sale will probably be like 10 or 12. Like, you can't, I mean, yeah. you just can't, I don't think you can argue with the quality you're getting. Like, it may not be for everyone, but the quality of the game itself is really high. And I feel like that's worth calling out in the year 2017, when some games, you know, don't have that polish. And this game does have polish.
Definitely, yeah. It's without a doubt a well-made game, you know.
Yeah, but it's got the Supergiant quality to it. It's just, I think it's a, you know, it's just not quite as good as their other games, which have been fantastic. So,
right.
But aside
and
from
if
that,
I could say one more thing about Pyre, no, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Other thing I played, so I got a new monitor. I think we talked about that a week or two ago.
Yes, yeah, your woes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've ranted about that. But so I got my new center monitor, and I've been playing games with it, and you know, really like it. It's a very nice monitor. But so I thought, I've been playing PUBG, you know, a little bit here and there, and like PUBG definitely runs smoother on this monitor. But I thought, what's another game that I can sort of like get a sense of how this monitor makes a difference compared to my old one. So like a game that's gonna really like push my computer a little bit. And I thought, you know what, GTA 5. When GTA 5 came out, you know, it was like, I think I had a 970 at that point, and it, you know, it would definitely get when you're like cruising really fast in a car or something. You know, it would the frame rate would get a little choppy.
Right.
So I thought, you know what, let me boot up some GTA 5 real quick. And, you know, just kind of drive around, kind of see, you know, see how it feels. And I noticed one, the 1070, like, eats up and spits out GTA 5. So my frame rates were a lot better than the last time I played it. But also just like, it was just super buttery smooth. So I spent a good probably hour just kind of driving around and causing mayhem in GTA 5, which, you know, it's just like, I feel like games like that, GTA 5, Just Cause, like just games where every now and then I get an hour out of just roaming the world. It was super fun. And I forgot that somehow I had like $30 million in the single player. So I basically just like went to, I don't remember how I got all this money. What? I think I did something with the stock market. It was some stock market thing. So I had $30 million on my single player account. So I just went to the gun store and bought like all the guns. And then just like, that I was awesome. You know, firing like RPGs at the helicopters. You know, I was just unloading with the minigun. So I, you know, that's definitely good for an hour of fun at a time. So I played a little bit of that. You know, I'll probably.
We all have comfort food games we can
yeah,
go to.
Yeah, and I thought I was going to try and play GTA Online, but when I loaded up GTA Online, one, those loading times are still abysmal. I don't know how GTA 5 does not have a better loading time situation, but it takes literal minutes to load into the game sometimes. And I loaded in, and I guess it's just because I haven't played GTA Online in a while. It's been at least a year, year and a half, 2 years, something like that. I load in and it is just nonstop. It's like nonstop messages and stuff about things I can be doing or like things other players are doing. It is for what is basically a new player, like me coming into the online, I haven't played in so long that I don't really know much about it. It was so overwhelming. Like, yeah, I don't know how a new player goes into GTA Online and figures anything out because there was just so much stuff on the screen. Nonstop like messages about, hey, you could be doing this, you could do this. I was getting like a phone call from this guy. It was a little overwhelming, and it took so long to load in. I was like, nah, no thanks. So
gotcha.
Yeah, but that was a good time for an hour. Let's roll into some news here. We talked real quick about Call of Duty. There was a little news article that apparently Call of Duty devs seem to be keen on winning over the PC community. And so I think this is an interesting conversation because you guys talked about some of the things you did and didn't like about the open beta. But the dev team over at Sledgehammer has apparently, you know, been listening. They've been on a marketing push to win over the PC audience. Excuse me. And so they've done a few things like a FOV slider, frame rate topping out at 250 FPS. The game supports 4K monitors. So, you know, I think stuff that we all sort of expect from a good PC game, but from Call of Duty, that's noteworthy, I suppose.
Right.
What do you guys, believe that they're going to deliver on this promise?
Not unless, I mean, we talked about this a little bit before, but I think they could, they can do all the marketing they want. They can do all the little things for PC that comes to their minds. It's not going to matter unless they get dedicated servers, which is something they currently do not have. It is still on a host process, picking someone who's in the lobby and basically hosting off the game off of them, which has made for me an extremely inconsistent experience. Basically either I can play the game just fine, or I'm going to spend about half of it with major packet loss, stuttering around anytime someone gets close to me, making the game not unplayable, but certainly not a pleasant experience. I don't know that I have too much to say in terms of whether or not they're going to win over the hearts and minds of PC players, other than I think just getting dedicated servers is going to be the biggest win they could possibly do.
Yeah. I mean, I look at this article and I just think, you know, it's really cool from them to go out and... Wait, who published this? Activision made this guy. Oh, wait. So Activision's come out and telling us they're going to win our hearts. The same people that told us Call of Duty 4 wasn't going to be released standalone? The same people that told us it was only going to be cosmetics in Call of Duty 4 Remastered? The same people that told us the crates in Black Ops 3 would only be cosmetic weapons? The same people that did the atrocity of crates in Infinite Warfare? Who has lied? countless times. This activism we're talking about, people, do not believe a word they tell you. Any ounce of faith they put into you, like you put into them, you're going to get dicked. I'm telling you, man, I am not going to listen to a thing activism says.
You tell
them. That is a company that lies. Sorry, I'm triggered. But I just have to get out there.
Yeah, I think the dedicated servers thing, it kind of surprises me that they don't really get out in front of that. Because we, in the pre-show, we were talking about the dedicated servers and trying to figure out what, you know, if they had commented on it. And from what I can tell, they haven't. They haven't, like, confirmed how the servers work. But someone on Reddit, of course, said that it looked like they were connecting to a cloud IP when they connected to the beta. Ying mentioned that he underwent a host migration in one of his games. Like, that's not a thing on dedicated servers. There's no need for a host migration. So it seems very interesting that they say they want to win over PC, but then they're not coming out and like confirming these important aspects of the game. And I think that's going to I agree with you a little bit, KD, that's going to make these words ring hollow, because it's like you're ignoring the elephant in the room. It's things like dedicated servers. It's things like how long are you going to support this game?
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just saying, I think it's they mention in the article that they talk about the hit marker sound effect. The little quote here. The hit marker sound effect, which is a really important cue for players on whether you made a hit on someone, wasn't working. We thought it sounded amazing going into the beta. The community did not, so we completely reworked that system, and now it's in the PC beta.
I do not like the kill sound, to be honest. I mean, it's like they changed it from to every time you kill a player, like not even a headshot, like the headshot sound is there. But every single kill is a whoosh, like a huge noise. And I'm like, this is great. You know, it sounds meaty, but when it's, if you get like a 40 frag game or something, like your boy did, then it's going to be a very annoying sound. But I mean, it sounds nice. Anyways, I said throw that in there. Shit on them real quick. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's a quote like that. It's like, okay, that's fine. If you're paying attention to whether or not people like the hit marker sound, that's, you know, that's good. But also that feels like pretty small potatoes in comparison to some of these things that you're not addressing. Like at the end of the day, the hit marker sound, it's like, it's whatever. Things like dedicated servers, things like no one for years now, no one has been looking at the Call of Duty games and saying, you know what? This game would have been great except for that hit sound. Like, that's the thing that really turned me off.
Man, if only they would change the hit marker sound, they would really win my heart and mind, guys.
It's ignoring what the real conversation is. Like, if they're paying attention to the community, no one in the community is, like, talking about the hit sound. And that's
I think before they should focus on the hearts and minds of the PC community, they should focus on being in the hearts and minds of just their general community, their general players that their game fucking hate them. They should probably focus on that first.
Yeah. They also, one of the other things they mentioned in this article here, is one of the most noteworthy changes to the PC version was a removal of auto aim for players who plug in a controller. And so, like, again, I'm like, what? Who has been complaining about the fact that someone could plug a controller into the PC version and get auto aim? No one does that. No one does that. Like, literally, tens of people do that in the whole world.
Be honest. I've heard that been brought up in conversation before. And my thought is, like, good. Because trying to play with a controller without auto-aim is a very difficult task. You, like, if you try to play, like, Halo or something without auto-aim or sticky aim, like, it's impossible. It's, like, it's literally, if you plug in a controller on PC, you get a disadvantage. Like, if anything, having auto-aim, like, or compared to, like, console, it's just your worst, like, you took your already like objectively worse control scheme and made it worse.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Why would they do that?
I guess a point in chat, because I did not really pay attention to the Call of Duty community, but apparently the auto aim in Black Ops 3 was actually a problem. Like, people were abusing it. But I think my point with this here in this article is, like, that should have never been a thing, right? No one should be playing with a controller on PC anyway. So, like, I agree with you that you don't put auto aim in, right? Just have a level playing field that you can play on mouse and keyboard with no auto aim. You can play on a controller with no auto aim. Like, basically make it where if people want to play on a controller, they get to use the controller and they have to deal with the disadvantages of that control scheme. It's just not, I feel like none of this is pushing the genre forward. All of this is just like, this is table stakes. And I feel like Call of Duty, if you want to impress the PC community, you got to do something to push PC games forward. But you're not doing that. Like, all of this stuff is complete table stakes, especially for a developer that has the kind of cash Activision does. Like, people expect this stuff. The fact that there's a frame 250 FPS frame rate, who cares? Like, yeah, it's important, but why would you not have that? You have so, like, there's so much development money behind this. Why would you not have that? Of FOV slider, that is, like, this is table stakes stuff.
Yeah.
The fact that at some point some of these Call of Duty games didn't have this is that much more damning, that they put it back in and that's supposed to be newsworthy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get triggered on this, but it's like, I'm just, what, when they say they want to win over the PC community, that doesn't just mean do the stuff that people expect from PC games. It doesn't mean do the stuff that clearly makes sense for a PC game. To me, it means let's like think about ways to push the genre forward. You've got all this development money, like think about interesting things you could be doing.
And despite the fact that they're doing all of those small quality of life that are improvements that are basically expectations now, on top, despite all of that, they still offer no information on your connectivity to the game. You still get those little three little green bars that are useless. I don't know what my connection is, if I'm getting packet loss or what my ping is. There's just three green bars, regardless of whether or not I'm lagging.
Right. Yeah, that's very annoying also.
Yeah, I think, anyway. Yeah, I'd like to play the beta, but I agree with what you guys said that it seems like in this day and age, it's going to be hard for me to pay $60 for a Call of Duty. And that's kind of that. I haven't missed the Call of Duties I haven't played. And even if this one is good, I'm just not looking to reward Activision with $60 for something that is, you know, that's like not really doing anything new. It's just a new setting, you know, Right. Well, new old setting. I mean, they've been to World War II many times in that series now. But going back there, it's like just do it. Not screwing the game up is not enough to win my $60, I'm afraid.
Yeah. And that's another thing from playing it is like, it's great that if you're into World War II games, it's one of the best World War II games, I guess, you know, in this modern time. But like, after playing it a bunch, it kind of gets boring. Like, you realize it's all stuff that you've seen before. There's not really anything new being done. I mean, Black Ops 3, like, say what you will about, you know, the jetpacks or the power sliding or anything, or the wall running, but it was doing something different. They were doing new things with their weapons. It was unique, but it's just, I mean, we're back to World War II, and I'm just worried people won't be expecting anything more or less than, you know, what other World War II games have done.
Yeah, I think it's going to, for me, we've talked about this before, but I'm not impressed anymore with the idea that you can put out a game year after year and the options available in the settings menu change every year. That seems just ridiculous to me. Mm. And I think that, like, all of this stuff they're saying about, like, uncapped frame rate and all of that, like, that is complete table stakes. If you have that one year, you should have it the next year. They should be building on, you know, on what are these basic things and have more advanced settings and options for the PC version, because that's what PC players care about. And I think eventually, again, this is like goes in a different direction, but I think just having a $60 game that releases every year, I'm kind of over that. Like, at what point are we going to get a game that is just Call of Duty? And like, we have the chance to actually build on this foundation where I don't have to pay $60 for some brand new, completely, you know, completely new setting each year. Why not roll that into a platform? Like, Call of Duty doesn't have a platform like other games do. Every other big, you know, big game or big publisher is trying to create platforms. And I don't always love it. Like, do I really want the Bethesda launcher installed when I could install it on Steam instead? No, not really. But I understand why they do it. Because they're trying to build a platform with their games so that they can have these long lives. And you don't have to release Quake Champions and Quake Champions 2 and Quake Champions 3 and Quake Champions 4. Yeah. You release Quake Champions, and then you try and build on that as a platform over time. Mm-hmm. And I think Call of Duty would be well-positioned. Like, if anyone's going to be positioned for that, it would be Call of Duty. But they don't want to risk, you know, killing their golden goose, which is that so many people still buy this $60 game every year. And I don't get it, but it still pays the bills. So,
yeah.
I'll just scream into the abyss every year.
Right, yeah. A small thing for me is, like, you know, like playing any newer Call of Duty, just thinking, man, there'd be so many great maps throughout this past decade of consistent games that would work very well in this game. And the only way we'll get this is through, like, DLC, you know?
Yeah, $15 map pack, man.
Yeah, more expensive than...
If you pre-order it, it comes with Nuketown.
Oh, Activision, thank you. Oh, my gosh.
You laugh because you know they'll actually do it. Enough about Call of Duty. I'm done with Call of Duty.
Let's get off that.
I think this is some lighter, like more positive news. So Assassin's Creed Origins... is getting an update to basically like take all the difficulty away from the game, and they're adding a new mode called Discovery Tour, and it's supposed to be like this education focused mode. So the game is a recreation of Egypt, and it's sort of a difficulty that basically lets you just take all the combat away, and it's kind of just a guided tour for people that want to just kind of explore, you know, the area, which I think is kind of a cool idea. I'm not sure that it's something that I would want to do, but I could definitely see, you know, if you paid for the game, and it has this cool setting, right, and they've put a lot of time into trying to make it like more historically accurate. Why not have a guided tour mode where you can kind of just walk around and see the sights. I think that's a neat idea. So I say good on Ubisoft, for kind of, I guess, allowing more ways to play than games traditionally have. What do you guys think?
Well, as someone who works in the education sector, this is a very interesting exercise to me. For anyone who's not aware, I'm the education coordinator for a museum. And seeing something like this sort of intersection between the technology that is more often associated with video games and seeing it extended into an educational application is very interesting. I like the idea of it, and I love that they're doing this. I don't see it being practically applied anytime soon, especially because I'm not really sure how you bring this to students in any kind of an accessible fashion, because, I mean, as far as I understand this still requires purchasing a copy of Assassin's Creed Origins, launching this game mode, and from what it sounds like, this is still like a sort of a single-player experience. I'm not really sure in any kind of a sense where they say there's a part of the article that says this is something that they've been asked to do by institutions and educators. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's meant to be student-oriented, and I'm not really sure how they're going to bring that to a student base. Nonetheless, I think this kind of an exercise with the kind of technology that Assassin's Creed has been using for years is fascinating, and I really like that kind of direction. I would love for them to do something like this that's almost like standalone and being sold as an educator tool. That is absolutely something I could see a lot of sort of new new takes on teaching and education would be really interested in. So yeah, definitely this is something I really like seeing, especially from the perspective of they're talking about doing things like having the full animation for mummification process and actually being able to visualize all of those things. Yeah, this is a very, very cool thing that they're doing. I don't think there's going to be any sort of practical application as it stands, but as an exercise, very, very cool. And I hope they continue down this path.
Yeah, it's neat that that it looks like they actually are gonna, like, they have interactive tours that are apparently curated by historians. So it's not at least based on what I can tell from the article they put out. It doesn't look like it's just taking all the enemies away and saying, hey, yeah, you can walk around with no enemies. It's actually it's actually adding on to the game's content by giving you, you know, these kind of interactive, more education focused tours, around, like, apparently the Great Pyramids, the life of Cleopatra, mummification, those sorts of things. I'm with you, Ying. I think it's a really neat idea. I'm not really sure, like, it doesn't look like there's real profit motive here, because, like, they're just adding it into an existing game, and right. I don't really think, I mean, I'd be surprised if anyone's really going to buy the game because it has this, but I think I'm curious, like, what the goal is with this, with this addition in their games, because I think Assassin's Creed does have some really rich settings that they go into, and I think it's cool that they've put in a little extra effort to... Like, you've already got all these awesome art assets and everything. Like, yeah, why not do maybe some good? And after you know, a child has rotted their brain by killing a bunch of people in Assassin's Creed, maybe they decide to click on the second menu, which is like the Discovery Tour, and they learn about some stuff.
And maybe that's the new punishment that parents are going to implement too. It's like, okay, well, instead of no more video games, you can only play Discovery Tour mode.
Oh no, man. I'll be good.
If you get grounded, they still let you play games, but you can only play Discovery Tour mode. You're forced to learn.
What a punishment.
No, definitely as a tool, this is very, very cool. And as an aside too, I mean, the notations that they seem to be adding for, you know, giving more detail, more historical background on things like the pieces of architecture that you encounter, the processes that you're looking at, and basically the setting that you're in, that's nothing new either. Assassin's Creed has always done a pretty good job of adding, like, a short notation into the index or the Animus database or whatever it's called, to actually explain what it is, and it's always been in place. So to see them expand on that kind of thing, definitely. It's one of those situations where it's like, this feels like, why not? They've had so many of these elements in place already. For them to actually take it in a full education swing is super cool.
Yeah, I think that it's like, it's such a big budget game already that it, you know, if they can get help, like, I bet they can probably get help from, you know, historians and some of these people in, like, the nonprofit sector without having to really add too much cost. Like, the cost is in the art assets, it's in, like, a lot of the stuff that they're already going to do for the game. So it is neat. Like, I'm guessing there's got to be some motive here where, like, they think they can make money off of this eventually or something, but maybe not. Like, maybe it's just a you know, sort of a public service, and I would like to think that that's you know, they want to educate kids, and if it's another option on the menu, maybe some kids might click on it and you know, actually learn something from these games. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is right up the alley of my own experience working at a museum. This is the kind of thing, if they sold this as a standalone, guaranteed you're going to see institutions investing money to put this kind of a thing on, like, a tablet so visitors can interact with it.
Yeah, it seems like a really cool, I could easily see this, like, in a museum, right, where you just have, like, Assassin's Creed on Discovery mode. I mean, why not? Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, you know, if you don't have a permanent Egyptology exhibit, well, put this on five tablets and visitors can interact with it. Like, that's an instant win for most museums. So, like, that's why I think it's a very cool idea.
Yeah, for sure. So good on Ubisoft. It's a pretty cool project, and I think that update, so it's a free update for Assassin's Creed Origins, that's going to come out in early 2018. So Assassin's Creed Origins comes out later this month, October 27th, and then that's going to follow as a free update several months after that. So cool stuff. On to something that's not as cool. Red Dead Redemption 2, which is a cool thing.
Yes, that I think a lot of people,
I think a lot of people are looking forward to. But a thing that is not cool is that it is apparently not coming to PC, or we don't know. So Rockstar tweeted the new trailer, so it has, Red Dead has a new trailer, and they said coming spring 2018 to PS4 and Xbox One systems. As far as I can tell, there is no word about PC, but I am worried that we might see another GTA 5 situation where they use the PC version. Maybe in, you know, 3-4 years, we see a PC version, and it's good, but at that point, it's a little bit old news. Or maybe we never see a PC version. Like, that's, I hope we eventually see a PC version.
Yeah.
But I'm worried that, like, they haven't said anything. So maybe they're just not going to do it at all. And it seems like best case we can hope for is a GTA 5 situation where it comes out, yeah, you know, a year or two after the fact. But even that is not great.
Yeah, that's what I could definitely see happening.
I don't see a future where this doesn't come out on PC. I think more so the question is like, how long is it going to be after release if it's not at release?
Yeah. Well, it is a shame because the trailer looks really nice. I know a lot of people are hyped for this game. But I don't think I'm going to buy a console just to play Red Dead. Heard a lot of good things, but it seems like a game that would be, like, it is such a pretty game already. It just seems like it is a game that would work so well on PC, the way that GTA 5 did. So, anyway, not much to say there. There was a new trailer or whatever, but,
I mean, I see in some of the Twitter replies, the real question is, when are we going to get it on the Switch?
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, hey, yeah, that, I'm all for, I mean, more games on Switch.
I hope we see a PC version before a Switch version.
Yes, that would be the real shot into the sun.
Hopefully in that order.
On,
yeah,
Switch before they do on PC.
Especially, you know, we had that article several months back that you know, Rockstar said that PC was, you know, was doing well for them. Seemed like they were, you know, we were like maybe hoping they would announce some Red Dead on PC because they were talking about how the PC was doing great for them, and then just nothing. So
I could see it coming out to Switch, and then the PC version will be a port of the Switch version.
Ooh. Like,
of that graphics. Man, what a
man.
That would be the worst. That would be the darkest timeline.
Definitely. Yeah, but I mean, I guess, you know, I kind of wish that they would just talk about it. Like, even if they would just say the PC version is going to be coming in spring 2019. Like, honestly, I don't really care. It's a single player game. I can wait as long as I need to wait, but I just don't love not knowing. And I'm sure that's by design. Like, they don't want you to know because they want you to buy this game twice, but they did such a good job with GTA 5. Like, especially when I went back this weekend and played it, I had to go adjust my resolution. I had to go back in the settings menu, and that settings menu is robust. Like, it is when we talk about Call of Duty, right? You talk about a big budget title doing it completely differently. GTA 5 has a myriad of settings, and like you can customize it to run exactly the way you want to. And I would, especially this Red Dead being a single player game, man, I would crank up all the options. Right, you don't have to worry about an online experience or like trying to get the best frame rate possible. I would crank that up all the way, just to see, you know, the Wild West in all its glory.
Right. Yeah.
Unfortunately,
the original Red Dead that still holds up very well visually.
Yeah.
On last gen systems.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll hear something about the PC version, but I'm not holding my breath. But come on, Rockstar.
Please. Please, Activision.
We got got a few quick hits here, real quick. Intel's Core i9 stuff got reviewed recently. And basically, I think kind of what we expected. So like the 7980X is a $2,000 processor. So needless to say, probably going to be fast. You know, it's probably going to be fast. As it turns out, yeah, it's pretty fast. it is the fastest CPU pretty much on the planet. But for $2,000, you know, I would hope so. That's sort of the point. So all these benchmarks, you know, it topped every one of them. But I think the takeaway, at least for gamers, is that for gaming, there's very little difference in this compared to, like a 7700K. And the 7700K is about $330. So it is a sixth, you know, fifth or sixth of the price of the 7980. All the CPU benchmarks, it does really well. I think it's, you know, it's cool that Intel makes this. But this is not for gamers. This is for people with more money than sense and like hardcore video editors, photo editors, anything, you know, rendering things that where you're doing really highly multi-threaded workloads. But it, you know, it's a cool to see the benchmarks. One of the cool things too is that, it has already been overclocked, to a ridiculous, 6.1 gigahertz.
Oh, wow. My God.
You know, cause this happens with every new CPU, but this, I mean, this was a pretty fast. So some people, this was cooled with liquid nitrogen, by the renowned overclocker, Dare 8 Hour. I don't know how you pronounce it, but, well known as in the overclocking scene. They have a picture of the chip, you know, with liquid nitrogen being poured into it. So 6.1 gigahertz, and at 6.1, it pulls 1,000 watts of power.
Insane.
1,000 watts of power.
Oh my God.
For reference, you know, most people's systems might have maybe like a 700, maybe 800 watt power supply, right? Most of them are probably like 500 or 600, most people's systems. This is 1,000 watts just from the CPU. That is absurd. So yeah, it is very power hungry. Not for the faint of heart. But you know, if you got $2,000 sitting around, I'm sure you probably have a very beefy power supply too. So you probably don't have to worry about it. But yeah, it is a monster. But if you know, shouldn't buy it unless money is no object. So always fun to talk about that sort of tech. I think the hopefully what comes out of this is, you know, this is an 18 core 36 thread CPU. It would be awesome to see that, to see some of, you know, some of that power come into the Core i7 line for the next generation. I think like 6 or 8 cores is kind of the sweet spot or where you'd really like to be as more and more stuff gets multi-threaded. So 18 cores, probably overkill, but I think like 8 cores would be really nice, especially for a gaming rig. So, last up, real quick hit here. Valve apparently made a deal with a 3D printing company. So the 3D printing company Shapeways, it allows you to upload designs for 3D printing. And Valve has, I guess, like given them blanket license to let them 3D print Valve IP on their service. So you could upload and sell real physical products through the service. And it sounds like Valve just takes a 10% cut off the top. And then it's all good. Like you don't have to worry about getting a cease and desist. If you want to sell some 3D printed, you know, Team Fortress figure or something, it sounds like you can do that, which I think is pretty cool. I'm kind of surprised that they're letting people do this, but apparently they are.
Well, I have to imagine the logistical nightmare of trying to tackle this any other way, to try to put some kind of a cap on unofficial unofficial, I guess, 3D printed specifically merch would have been so difficult. This kind of seems like, as you said, like a sort of a blanket licensing, at least for this one company, kind of simplifies the problem. I mean, this is just almost like Occam's razor, where it's just, you know, let's just apply a blanket solution that's relatively simple and just try to make the problem go away. Because yeah, it makes it sound like this was an issue prior to this.
Right. It definitely seems, it does kind of seem like a Valve-like solution, which is that Valve doesn't want a human moderate anything. I'm just kind of surprised that it seems somewhat generous compared to how Valve typically is. Like a 10% royalty, if you would have told me this story and said, like, how much royalty would Valve take for this sort of, you know, for allowing this, I would have guessed at least 20% and maybe like 30%. But a 10% royalty, I think, is actually like incredibly reasonable for letting people use the IP Valve owns. And like they mention, you know, there's like portal earrings and, you know, other stuff that is like not allowed at all unless you have explicit permission, from, you know, from the IP holder. So I think it's pretty cool. Basically, you give Valve a 10% cut of this thing you made, and they'll let you sell it and actually make money on it, which is pretty rare. Like, most of the time, brands do not allow this at all. Like, they will not allow you to sell anything with, like, their logos or, you know, their property on it. So good on Valve. I think it's cool. Like, people obviously want this sort of merchandise, and now they have a way to get it. So pretty neat stuff.
Yeah, that is really cool. I'm excited to see what will come from this.
Yeah, there's some really neat 3D printed stuff out there. And I think allowing people to have an avenue to sell it means that there will be more of it, as opposed to just, you know, hobbyists doing it and making stuff for themselves.
Right, exactly.
Cool. It's cool.
Like, well, sponsored.
Let's get into those new releases. AD's End, take us away.
So here we go. Nothing too crazy this week. Well, I mean, actually, as far as quantity goes, nothing too crazy. But three pretty good games coming out. So first up is Forza Motorsport. Motorsport. I always mess up saying that word. Forza Motorsport 7 comes out for Xbox One and Windows 10 through the Microsoft Store. I haven't personally played too many racing games, so I'm not familiar with Forza at all. But yeah, that's a
anyone who plays racing games on Xbox would be familiar with Forza. That's like,
yep, exactly.
Like, yeah, that's the series.
Yeah, that's the staple for sure. So yeah, it just looks like more of the same. Again, not really entirely sure, you know, the details, but hopefully it's good. It's going to be a gorgeous 60 FPS and 4K resolution, according to the Windows Store page. That's very nice.
Mm.
Cool. But yeah, check that out October 3rd. Next up is a game called Battle Chasers Night War. It's from Airship Syndicate, which is a fantastic name for a game developer. Airship Syndicate. Yeah, round of nice. Applause. And it's published by THQ Nordic, but it's first time to release from that developer. Looks like it's going to be a dungeon crawling, classic JRPG style RPG. And it looks like, if you're looking for polish, this looks like a damn beautiful game. And yeah, that comes out October 3rd. It's going to be $29.99, but if you pre-order it, you get it for 10% off, so. Yeah, this is a game actually picked from Greenlight. So one of the few good things that come from Greenlight, you know, besides what was it? The Mexican Dream. That might have been another Greenlight game. But yeah, here's a game with some actual promise behind it. I'm looking at the store page now. It's got the best RPG of E3 nominee from IGN. Wow. There you go.
Yeah, that was a serious nomination.
Yeah. This game looks like some hot shit.
That's definitely a nice looking game. Nice art style.
Yeah, definitely. But last up, this is a game I remember coming out back in like 2013, 2014, seeing very, very early gameplay for, and then pretty much total silence for me anyways. I haven't really went out of my way to keep up with it, but this game is called A Hat in Time. It was a successful Kickstarter. It is a platform game that is finally coming out October 5th. And just taking a look at gameplay from, now compared to when it was first in its alpha stages, I remember watching like old speedrunners play this in the like alpha gameplay, and it looks like an entirely different game. It looks so well polished. From clips I've seen on Twitter, it looks like speedrunning is going to be a hugely viable thing to do in this game. So that alone might make me pick this game up. It looks very well polished. Looks like a lot of variety. Also, like one level, it's kind of like a stealth platforming section. One level, you're literally trying to solve like a murder mystery on a train while doing some platforming. The polish on this game also looks through the roof. And it looks like you're exploring through massive worlds and solving different missions throughout those worlds. Because it says only 5 worlds, but it looks like there's going to be more to do in this game. So, yeah, October 5th, this game finally comes out, and I'm very excited.
Got a developer with a cool name, too. Gears for Breakfast.
Yes! Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
Good name.
Developer and publisher, yeah. All right. But, yeah, that's going to be it for this week. Nothing to, not a lot to cover, but I'm excited for the ones that aren't Forza, I'm excited for.
That's some good variety, though. You got, you know, AAA racing game. You got an RPG. You got a platformer. You know, something for everyone.
Yeah. Definitely right. Something for everyone. No pigeon dating, which, you know.
Nice
and
variety.
No anime. Yeah, sorry, guys.
Well, I mean, there's a deluge of that every single week, so.
Oh, yeah. Every single day, you've got 2 or 3 just absolute scumfuck anime visual novels coming out. let's keep that off our esteemed podcast. Even I have some sense.
I was going to say, yeah, you've got some standards. When it makes it on here, it's past what is already a pretty low bar, but is a high bar compared to what makes it onto Steam.
Yeah, there are two documents. There's like my new releases and the KBMod new releases. Mine usually has about 25 games for this week. The KBMod has 3. So, you know, Cancel everything else is like
Asian women.
Kai Nako Densetsu, go! Or, you know, some shit like
God.
That. Okay, anyways.
Let's get into our viewer questions here. First one comes from Queen Cypriana via Twitter. This is a very important question. How do you guys drink your coffee?
Hmm.
I don't know if we've answered this one before.
I don't know.
Well, I've got a very straightforward answer. Black. Okay. No sugar, no milk, no cream.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Okay. I feel like that says something about a man's personality. I respect that.
Huh.
Okay, about you, Katie?
You know, for as much coffee as I have, I really don't play it I play it safe a lot. I have a Keurig, so I put in, you know, I have the K-cup, and then I have either, it's at any given time, it's either like French vanilla coffee creamer. I don't really use powdered creamer. I always use like liquid creamer. Well, so like French vanilla,
well, of course.
Or like.
Yeah, I mean, we're not, yeah, you're not a monster.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who uses powdered creamer, I'm very, very shocked by your life choices. So I would never do that.
Okay. So usually you go with a K-cup. What's your go-to Keurig flavor?
Yeah. It's tough for me to really tell the difference between a lot of brands. I really like the thing is like, I don't buy the K-cups. I feed off of them.
Okay, like so you just take what's given to you.
I take what's given to me, but I mean, I do have some I prefer, like the donut shop blend, that's pretty good. Starbucks, okay. Any roast from them is usually pretty nice, but I prefer a lighter roast.
Okay, and then you have some French vanilla creamer.
Yeah, just coffee and creamer, that's pretty much it for me. I don't add any sugar, I don't add any bleach. You know,
no bleach.
Sorry, what?
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
Does the French vanilla creamer have some sugar in it, though?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm kind of going for when I pour in like that kind of creamer. Is like, I don't need to worry about adding in more sugar unless it's like a particularly like weak kind of coffee tasting. But I pour in a little bit of sugar.
Okay.
But yeah, never powdered creamer.
Yeah, no, yeah, powdered creamer, that's like, you know, they might have that at like your auto body shop, Maybe at your workplace. I've worked at some places that just had, like awful drip Folgers coffee and powdered creamer, which is, that's a rough way to live.
Oh God. No one is really happy living that way.
You don't
know how good you could be having it if you're having powdered creamer.
Yeah.
It's kind of like people who, I don't need Blu-ray. I can see a DVD just fine. Tell what's going on. I don't need to see every freckle on their face.
In this analogy, I feel like it would be like saying, I don't need a Blu-ray. I have a cassette tape.
Yeah. I have a picture show. I have silent movies.
I used to do sugar in my coffee, but I don't anymore. So I now just do like regular coffee, and I will do just like a little bit of milk. I don't put much in at all, just like a little bit. So I could probably go black if I needed to. Like if there was no milk around, I could drink black. But I prefer it just a little bit, like with a little bit of milk, or half and half, or like whatever is available. Yeah. Oh, not super picky. But yeah, I used to drink coffee with Splenda, but not anymore. I've weaned myself off of it. So,
yeah, part of me feels like I should try black coffee. Like I've tried black coffee. Like I know I don't like it, but I haven't really given it like a chance for like me to become like accustomed to it.
The danger with that is that once you get used to black coffee, you cannot drink anything else.
Really,
even having like the smallest amount of milk or sugar in coffee is too much for me. Like it's all I can taste. So like once you get used to black coffee, at least me personally, it is so difficult to drink anything else.
Is that legit where the saying once you go black, you never go back comes from?
Yes, that is what that comes from. That is a saying about coffee.
Well, typical millennial myself did not think it came from coffee. Let me tell you.
Wow.
Thought it was millennials. From something else.
there might be more than one origin of that quote, depending on where you want to source it.
Where you want to, you know, right. That's true.
Think, okay. Yeah, I think you have to have good coffee for you to want to try to do it black or like without sugar.
You know, that is a good point.
Like
if with a
K-cup, like K-cup is probably, I don't know. It's like on the border maybe. But there are some really good coffee places in San Francisco. We're like really spoiled with the coffee quality here. And some of those places, like if you go to one of those places and get black coffee, it is gonna, like, you would probably like it and you'd be like, oh, I like black coffee now. And you would go and you would get black coffee. Like you would just have your K-cup black and you'd be like, oh no, this is garbage. And it's because really good coffee, that's sort of how I tricked myself into drinking it in the first place without sugar. Mm. When I had really good coffee that didn't have sugar in it, I was like, oh, I could actually drink this. But the coffee quality matters a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, I probably should qualify that. Like I buy bags of like whole bean coffee in like small batches from like a coffee shop that's like down the road from me, and I grind that myself and put it in a French press. So I'm not doing like a K-cup.
Oh man, you're on the whole other side of the spectrum here. you're about to lead KD into uncharted territory when you're over here.
Yeah.
You're over here cooking up. You know, you're practically a barista.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually next time I see Katie, I'm gonna bring my French press with me, and we'll do like the cute, what's the scene from the movie with is the ghost helping her make pottery? I'll do that with Katie, but we'll be using a French press grinding coffee beans.
Oh, I can't wait, man! That sounds like such a delightful evening.
I think even like Starbucks is okay though. It's not like you have to have incredible coffee. It's just that it's got to be probably a little better than, you know, a K-cup or Folgers or, you know, other like store-bought ground coffee, like Ying is talking about. If you grind up your own beans yourself and put in a French press, or you get it from, you know, for Starbucks or something, that's like probably the minimum quality threshold that I would do for black coffee.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good question.
Good question. Yeah. Good conversation coming from that question.
Yeah, I'm really surprised Ying drinks his coffee black and is like a coffee connoisseur over here. Very impressed. Man sweet. Of many talents.
Enjoying coffee is one of my greatest talents.
Well, no, I mean, you're grinding the beans yourself. You do the French press yourself. I mean, you're practically running your own Starbucks over there.
That's right. Yeah, I live in a Starbucks, actually.
Next question comes from Not So on Twitter. He says, if you had to wear a Halloween costume every day for the rest of your life, what would you be?
It's actually a really good question. I can't think of a...
I think any good answer would be like a cheat, you know?
My assumption is you can't be like, I'm going to dress like an adult or whatever. Like, you can't just be...
I don't think you can say I would dress like James Bond. And basically what you mean is like, you just wear a tuxedo all the time.
Yeah. Right. You have to pick something that meets a certain threshold of standing out.
That would be like a costume that you would buy at like a Party City or like a costume place.
I'd go as Isaac from Dead Space 2 so I can walk around in the advanced suit all day. Who the fuck is going to disrupt me? Who's gonna have a confrontation with me if I'm walking around the
edge? Who's gonna risk returning their movie rentals late?
No one will. They'll be on time. I just have to do like a Dead Space breathe. Like, okay, a Tuesday before midnight.
Oh my god.
That's like, I'd probably do that. I don't know. That probably would
for the rest of your life. Like, you have to wear that everywhere.
Hey, that would be quite a stream personality. That'd help me grow.
Yeah. That's true. If you had to do it, I mean, you could kind of lean into that as as your on-stream personality too.
You could your entire stream could be built around Isaac plays anime visual novels.
Oh man. Be good. I could probably cosplay. Go ahead.
I'm trying to think something I could, you know, that I could pull off every day for the rest of my life. I would probably go for like a cowboy, like an old like 1800s cowboy, and so I would just walk around with with like boots on, you know, spurs, jeans, you know, cowboy hat. Like a fake revolver and just kind of, and basically just lean into it and just pretend that I can already sort of pull off the old West Texas accent. So, I just walk around and kind of, I would be the true cowboy and no one would know.
Yeah. That's good. Cause you could integrate that into every aspect of your life and it wouldn't be too bad.
Well, I mean, I think it would be bad because you'd be living a lie. But you could do it.
But so
it wouldn't be like I'm, because like if you're, I don't know, if you're like Dracula or something, how do you integrate that into your life? Like, you're just gonna walk around and you're gonna look foolish because like no one knows why you're dressed like this. But there are people that actually, like maybe I'm just from, I'm from the farm, and I just came from my ranch and now I'm a city slicker. And, that's like a real thing. Some people still wear, they still wear spurs on their boots. You know, they still wear a long button down shirt and a cowboy hat. So I could get away with that.
Mm-hmm. I could see myself going as like maybe the kid from Bastion. Cause I mean, think about all the running and the rolling he's doing. He's probably very comfortable in those clothes. So I think long term, it's not too much. I was thinking like maybe Hedwyn from Pyre. But that those robes, like however comfy they look, they probably get very hot, considering the setting of the game.
The thing is, you wouldn't be very recognizable as those. That would just be like a. I think you got to pick something that someone would know walking down the street what you were.
Man,
I'm making up this additional qualification.
Yeah.
What about how about Batman? But it's like very, very early Batman, where all
Adam West, the spandex. Adam West,
yeah. I'm not talking covered in like metal armor. I'm talking about like very casual, very simple looking Batman attire. Where I mean, I would get some bad looks. Like people be like, "Oh my god, look at him! I can see his bulge and everything." And
you basically just couldn't go into any nice restaurant ever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, maybe Robin.
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's a tough question. The cowboy, that's probably a good answer. I mean, yeah, that is
a good answer. I was trying to find the most endearing Halloween costume that, even if it's not necessarily contextually appropriate, I feel like it, you know, people might find it charming nonetheless. So I was thinking like Mario.
Because,
I mean, the clothes are going to be relatively multi-purpose. And if I ever need to, like, I can take off the hat and it's going to be a little more acceptable depending on where I go. And there are cases where Mario doesn't have his hat. So I was thinking
so basically
maybe that
you're
might
just like, you're like a guy walking around in red overalls all the time.
Yeah, that would essentially be it.
Okay. It's
blue.
I really needed to, like, I could really lean into the whole Mario aspect of it. And I think it might be the most endearing Halloween costume I could find in most contexts. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so would you take on the real-life role of Mario? Like, would you take on his accent? Would you take on his mannerisms? Or would you be Ying in a Mario costume?
What can you tell me about the spinning?
What? See, the problem is that I live in a downtown core, and there's a lot of homeless people here, so am I trying to jump on their cups of coins everywhere I go?
I mean, it depends on how hard you want to lean into the character, you know?
True.
That's for you to answer.
I feel like I can't do Mario a disservice, so I think that's what I have to do.
Okay.
Well, I think I'll become Mario.
That would be a lifestyle shift for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Overwatch is pretty well known. I think I'll do Hanzo. I mean,
okay.
I don't know if I can pull off a Hanzo.
Okay, so
it doesn't matter if you can pull it off.
So just like baggy pants, no shirt, bow and arrow everywhere you go?
Yeah, he's got it kind of half put on with the belt going around.
Okay.
I mean,
so looking to show off your physique.
I mean, it doesn't matter about that. I'm just thinking, what is going to draw the least looks? I mean, if I've got that tattoo on, that's probably going to be like a lot of people like, hey, I really like your tattoo. I'll be like, hey, thanks.
But
I'm Hanzo.
You picked Hanzo to draw the least looks. No one's gonna take a second look at the guy walking around with no shirt on.
Well, if they do, it's gonna be compliments because, like, I feel like most people who see tattoos and are into tattoos, like, they will go out of their way to compliment.
I see.
Tattoos.
So they're just gonna think you're walking around because you're with no shirt on because you're trying to show off your tattoo.
Let me look at Hanzo's skins real quick and see if maybe there's something. Or he's maybe a bit more clothed. You see, boom.
He's like fully robed.
Yep, I'll do Hanzo and the young Hanzo. No, that doesn't even work. I'm kind of going too far away where it's like, it's not even recognizable. I'm going to stick with the kid from Bastion.
Okay.
You know,
I think that's on the edge there. Because Ying has literally transformed his life to become Mario, and you're just saying you're gonna like roll around.
Oh wait! I'll do Batman from Bastion. I forgot.
I'm gonna have to be jumping into the sewer system of my city to transform my life.
Yeah.
If I'm going around as Batman, people are like, "He's robbing that bank! Stop him!"
He's just gonna get gunned down in a situation where he has to get involved.
Yeah. Right. I'll meet no expectations put on me.
All right. Well, those are some pretty good answers. That's a tough question. For the rest of your life is the hard part.
That's why I was also thinking Mario. I mean, he's going to be recognizable, but overall, he's wearing normal clothes, like overalls and a shirt.
The other thing, I think the thing we missed too, that I think this is where KD missed a little bit, is every day for the rest of your life, would you really want to be Hanzo from Overwatch in like the year 2040? Like when like the game is probably dead and gone. No one would know who you are. You're going to be like the 55-year-old guy walking around with no shirt on with a tattoo. Like you wouldn't be able to explain that away.
Yeah, it kind of gets.
Whereas Mario might be timeless enough that people will still know Mario in the next 30, 40 years.
What about a member of Organization 13 from Kingdom Hearts, where it's literally, it's a black trench coat with a hood pulled over where no one can see your face?
That sounds
problematic for
other reasons. You're locked in. You're locked in.
Okay, all right, Batman it is.
but specifically Adam West era Batman.
Okay.
Right?
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll go with that because I'm going for the maximum comfort because I'm sleeping in this thing too.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to sleep in, you know, Arkham Knight an outfit. That would just be a very uncomfortable night.
Surprised you didn't choose Sonic. Iconic.
I would never have chosen Sonic. We could have been on this segment for maybe 2-3 hours. I would never have. I don't think I ever would have found my way to Sonic.
Put on some red shoes, wear the hat, turn yourself into a hedgehog.
Oh, I mean, as tempting as that sounds, I'm going to have to say that idea does not entice me, unfortunately.
All right, well, we'll have to keep brainstorming that one. All right.
Shadow the... No, I'm just kidding.
Our last question comes via email from Ikantu. You can email us each week when we call for questions. If you email community@kbmod.com, we take email submissions too. Ikantu says, this is a little bit longer, but I think it's a good question. After a conversation with my cousin a few weeks ago, I came to the realization that video games had impacted his life in a way that I had not considered before. Prior to 2006, he had been having a hard time with his literacy skills and would struggle to form coherent written sentences. This all began to change during 2006 after I convinced him to begin playing, the MMORPG RuneScape with me. The fact that all communication in that game between players was text-based subsequently forced him to learn and apply the grammatical conventions necessary for communicating effectively. And after only a few years, he had elevated himself to the standard required of people his age. And while it is most likely true that RuneScape was not solely responsible for his dramatic improvement, he is convinced that his progression would have been far slower without it. In light of this, I'd like to know if any of you can attribute significant improvements in yourself to the playing of either a specific video game or video games in general. So thank you for that question, Ikantu. Pretty good one.
That is such a cool story.
Yeah, that was awesome.
To hear that kind of intersection between someone's academic life and that intersection with video games and how it improves that aspect of it, like, that's super cool.
Yeah,
I would say, like, my answer would probably be along the same line, is like, just like communication in games, because being a young boy playing Counter-Strike minigame servers, it was rough. Because as soon as you said one word, people pounce on that high-pitched voice, say, "What the fuck are you doing, kid? Get out of here." So, and I mean, like, not only in the game for, like, I mean, now I'm talking all the time in games. I'm challenging people. I'm, you know, having fun. I used to, like, not talk at all, but it also kind of goes to real life too, because, like, I've always kind of struggled with anxiety, and especially, like, I think I would not even be able to, like, work in, like, a, like, give speeches or, like, work in a retail setting or, like, a, you know, public setting if I didn't. I mean, it's kind of the same thing here where I can't solely attribute that to, you know, learning to, you know, debate people in CS a source, I guess. I don't know. I guess something along the same lines. But that is a really cool story. That is awesome. I'm definitely going to – that really should be considered more. I know, like, hand-eye coordination.
Oh, goodness.
Hand-eye coordination. All right, there we go. Got it. Oh, God.
They'll have some learning to do there on the communicating effectively.
You got to set you up with some RuneScape.
You need to set me up with some phonics before I stutter some more. I owe everything to Sonic Schoolhouse. Man, what a game that was. I'm serious, dude. Fucking Sonic Schoolhouse. You'd have to walk around the building. You'd see, like, the math equations on the board. You'd have to go to the room, pick up the letter or the number 2, bring it over to the chalkboard. Oh, look, Eggman's dicking around. If he touches you, the number goes back to the board. Dude, I was hit at that game. Man, Sonic Schoolhouse. Is there a speedrun setting for this? Or a scene for this? Hold on. Sonic Schoolhouse. Sonic Schoolhouse. Oh, my God. What a throwback. We kind of went off on a very big tangent there, but
I think it's, I mean, my example is kind of hard to say, because video games in general have affected my life in so many different ways that just saying like one specific thing doesn't even really do it justice. I mean, where I live right now, like, is basically because of relationships I made playing video games. But I think this question is maybe a little more, pointed in kind of progression or, like, developing a skill you wouldn't have had. And I mean, in middle school and high school, I was the fastest typist in my entire class. Like, I took a keyboarding class in high school that I basically just sat in and did other homework because I would finish the lesson so quickly. And so I was like, I was the only person typing like 130 words per minute, you know, in high school at that time. So, you know, mm-hmm. that's like, I guess maybe a small thing. But I spend, you know, probably half my life typing at a computer, and playing video games and like being in IRC chat rooms and like then playing MMOs where it's a lot of, at that time, it was a lot of text-based communication. Like, we weren't really using, voice servers all the time, like people do now. Playing WoW, playing Star Wars Galaxies, like typing constantly, you know, ended up being helpful because I type a whole lot now. And I think, you know, meeting people online turned out to be a pretty big difference maker in my life. So while it wasn't a skill necessarily, meeting people, it turns out you can make friends over the internet, and those friends can actually have a really positive impact on your life. So, yeah, I mean, that's hard to say the ways that, like, haven't been affected by video games because, I spent so much time playing them that I don't really know what my life would be like without them. Like, they played such a pivotal role.
Right.
Yeah, I think my answer is somewhere along the same lines of that. I mean, I'll tell this story. I'll try to give more of like a condensed version of it, because it has had such a, I guess, a relatively specific impact on my life. But even getting involved with Extra Life, that comes down to some of my early experiences with video games. I grew up in like a very small, have much of an internet connection. And also, I mean, there weren't very many people that played video games whatsoever in the first place. So I was, especially during my childhood when video games were the thing that I loved to do, I was subjected to the old trope of, you know, video games don't actually amount you to anything. They're a waste of your time, down to things like, they make you stupid and they rot your brain. And it's just, you know, the worst way to be spending your time. And I've had, friends say that to me. I had my parents' friends say that to me. I've had teachers say that to me, basically all the way through my elementary school career. And so I grew up actually believing that, thinking that this thing that I really like doing is objectively a bad thing. And so every time I wanted to play video games, I felt bad about it because I felt like I shouldn't be doing that. And it wasn't until maybe towards the end of high school, beginning of my university career, that I sort of broke that preconception about video games, because I started to get more involved with online communities and I could see that there's a lot of other people that liked playing video games. And almost out of frustration that I was subjected to that kind of a thing when I was a kid and thinking this thing that I loved was objectively bad, is a part of what inspired me to get involved with Extra Life and be part of these video games, these efforts that involve video games making changes for good and actually making a difference and doing all these positive things for communities that need help. So it's difficult to specify it because that is such a large part of my life now and all the experiences that sort of stem from that as well. Like the Extra Life land and meeting all of these people that I talked to online previously. It's certainly difficult to specify, down to one, but it certainly has been like a part of my life that is separate from like work and school and family that I would say has like definitely opened my eyes to a different part of the world in terms of like how I can get involved and the things that I like doing. So I would say that's not very specific, but certainly has been a large part of my life.
Yeah. That's a cool example. I love that so many people have found ways to make, like turn their gaming into a hobby that they can feel proud of instead of a hobby that you're ashamed of, or, you know, that like, that your parents don't approve of, or that they think you're wasting, you know, you're wasting your time. Cause I definitely dealt with a lot of that, in my middle school, high school days, where my parents were not super happy with the amount of time I spent playing games and perhaps justifiably so. But I think now there are a lot more outlets, you know, like Extra Life, for example, where you can put gaming in the positive light that I think we all agree that it is. Like, it is a positive force, if you want to use it that way. And I think it's cool that we've got some good stories about how gaming has positively changed our lives. But I think there are more and more people these days that have those stories, and I think that's awesome. As gaming becomes more mainstream. So that's a awesome question, Cantu. Thanks for sharing your story with your cousin, and I hope you enjoyed our little throwbacks about our stories. But I think we're gonna wrap it up here. This is normally where we would do a little iTunes podcast review of the week, which you guys are slacking. We did not have one this week. So, maybe, you know, it's possible. iOS 11 just came out. Everything's changed. You know, people don't know how to use their phones anymore. They got to get used to it. Look, I get it. Okay. But iTunes still works the same way. It's still garbage, but it still works the same way. So iTunes, you can go on your desktop or on your phone. You can go to the podcast app if you have an iPhone and, search for KB Mod. You will find us there. And then you just leave us a review. Got to be 5 stars if you want it featured, because that's the rating that we deserve. And other ratings, frankly, I don't know why they're even there. If you hate the podcast, that's fine. 5 stars, tell us why you hate it in the review, right? That's how it should work. But yeah, leave us 5-star review and we will potentially feature you on the cast. So hopefully we'll get some reviews in. We really enjoy those, but, that will have to wait until next time. Thank you for joining me this evening, KD and Ying. I believe Scott may be back next week, or, you know, depending on the result of his accident, maybe he'll never be back. No, I'm kidding. He's fine, but well, I mean, not fine. He's you know, he's definitely not fine. But as far as I know, he's not physically injured. I feel like I have to keep qualifying this statement. I believe he is the same as he's been. I don't believe there are any alterings,
right,
to his personality or to his physical body. Yeah, it's definitely not the good. Like, it's not good, but it's never been good. So,
it's what you're used to. So.
Yeah, more of the same. I don't believe there's any major differences, positive or negative, and you will have to take that as you see fit for your perception of Scott. But thanks for joining us on this episode, episode 295 of the KB Mod Podcast. We will be back, I believe, next week, probably. Sure, for 296. If you want to follow us and keep track of us while we're not podcasting, you can follow us, obviously, at kbmod.com. That's where we post news, we post the podcast, build guides, etc. We're also on all the social media platforms, but we're typically most frequent on Twitter, at KBMod Gaming. You can follow us there. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Volition. That's VOL1TION. You can follow KD at KDZen _.
Ooh.
At KDZen _. The new one.
Yeah.
And you can follow Ying at Yingity Yang on Twitter as well. And I think your Twitch channels are both the same as your Twitter. You guys both stream a fair amount. With that Twitch affiliate status. So check out their Twitch channels as well.
I want to throw in, definitely follow Brandon on Twitch as well, because he doesn't stream like very often by any means, but occasionally there'll be a kind of birthday stream or surprise Hitman stream, and they're just always lovely. When you
watch them, they are rare, but if you want to follow me on Twitch, you know, I would say whenever I stream, it is a treat. It is a treat.
Yes.
But that's going to do it for episode 295. We will see you next time for episode 296. Until then, farewell.
Yatta!